I mean, this changes things for Tottenham. We're talking about an era where you're almost stuck under the same cycle over and over again. You know his celebration?
Yes.
His celebration is him looking for a better midfielder than him. There is no better midfielder in the world than Pedri.
The goats of every country.
We here.
Hello, welcome everybody to another episode of the 6 Yard Box podcast. This is International Break Edition, where we are steaming ahead with a couple of creative ideas, trying our absolute best to bring you the best content in this dry spell for football. I am here joined for a two-man edition of the podcast with European champion Antoine. How are you doing, my friend?
Doing okay. I'm happy that the we here fully went through because I'm a little sick right now and I'm scared I was going to cough up a...
And that's the perseverance we need
exactly.
for this podcast.
Yeah, and I'm here for this.
It's been a good weekend of sports, despite...
Sports, yeah.
Footy not, like, you know, being there like it usually is.
Exactly, right? I see a lot of talk.
F1.
Around...
football.
Yeah. I see a lot of talk around international break being underrated.
Underrated. You're lucky Blake's not here.
Yeah. I kind of agree with it. Like, low-key, like, when it's the international break, it's a different aspect of football that I kind of enjoy.
I don't know if I enjoy. I won't lie.
Yeah?
Nah.
You're a club over country kind of guy.
No, like, it depends. It depends what's happening. If we're, like, qualifiers, I could, like, consume. Mm-hmm. If it's the friendlies, if it's, like, the overreacting to games, then I'm a bit like, okay, like, what are we doing
Like, here? When Ronaldo scored that brace, you weren't excited?
We're going to get to that when we get to that. Also in this episode, ladies and gentlemen, the meat and potatoes is that we are picking the GOAT of all of the biggest footballing nations in the world. That includes the best European countries. That includes Argentina. That includes Brazil. That includes...
Uruguay. Canada, Mexico.
Yes, can't forget Uruguay.
Can't forget Uruguay.
The Titans of the 1930s.
Shout out Recoba.
Shout out Recoba, man. Shout out Recoba. Also, Mexico, U.S., Canada, because bias in it.
Yeah.
We're going to get to that when we get to that. But first, we have some big orders of business to get to, Antoine. The biggest of them all, I would say.
See, like, I want to almost, if I'm you, I'm almost claiming a piece of that.
Yeah.
Of that loan deal.
Yeah.
Because I think someone at Manchester United saw the Lyon clip that did decent numbers on TikTok.
Yeah.
Saw the sign in the back and was reminded, oh shit, we got to sell this motherfucker.
Andre Onana is off to Trabzonspor in the Turkish Super League. There is no buy option. There is no buy guarantee. It is just Trabzonspor covering the wages, which I'm surprised they're covering the full wages. They're actually putting in a little bit more than that. No loan fee either, but just a straight loan for 1 year. He comes back
full
next July, and we're probably selling him. I'm not going to lie. Okay. But I wish all the best to Andre Onana. Jack up your price so that we could not take as much of a loss on you next summer.
It's a big year for him, actually. He has AFCON, too.
He does have AFCON as well.
Is he Cameroonian?
Yes.
Okay. Cameroon qualified?
For AFCON?
I know it's Ghana that didn't qualify, sorry.
Oh, well, I'm surprised you're tapped in with that.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't want to tap in this year.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. But shout out to Trabzonspor, taking them off our books. Now it is on to the Sene Lamens train.
So if you look at a big picture, this United transfer window is almost, in terms of getting people off your books,
yes.
I'd say it's very successful.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, if we had to rate it out of 10, I'd give it, like, a 5.5.
Oh, okay.
Because I'm happy that we're getting people off our books, right. But we've only brought in 4 players.
Well, I mean, they're...
4 meaningful players.
They're pretty big players, though.
I get it, but, like, it's not as much of, like, an overhaul with new faces as I wanted it to be, right?
You wanted more than this?
Like, in terms of outgoings, I'm happy. They had to go. That was like a given. But I think if you told me in June that United would only sign 4 first team quality players, I mean, even that's arguable because I don't know if Lamens is going to start right away. But if you told me that United are only going to sign 4.
Yeah, but look at their names though. Players. Like for me, there's obviously still that midfielder signing that's lacking.
And that's the big one.
That's the big one, right? But all in all, I think 5.5 is a little bit harsh. I mean, you sign probably two of the best signings that you could have made for what United is right now in Matheus Cunha and Brian Mbeumo. I mean, you've seen what they can offer so far. I'm very optimistic for their future in United.
Yeah.
And then Sesko, there's a little bit of interrogation mark surrounding him, but I don't see why he shouldn't succeed.
Yeah, but I think their chances of succeeding is so much lower without that midfielder.
Fair enough.
And that bothers me, man. That bothers me.
So if you sold Bruno, then you would have been 7, 8 out of 10.
It's Bruno's 31st birthday. I can't be
Happy
pushing,
birthday.
Can't be pushing that agenda. Not today. Not today. I love the man. But yes. There's another notable departure in the Premier League this week, and that was Daniel Levy leaving Tottenham after like 20-odd years or like nearly 20 years at the helm as executive chairman of the club. You know, basically the face of this period of mediocrity until the Europa League final.
Yeah, I mean, this changes things for Tottenham.
It does.
This is like, we're talking about an era where you're almost stuck under the same cycle over and over again, right? With the new managers almost every season. No manager lasting more than two seasons. Like,
yeah. I think it deserves a little bit credit of like, I think especially with the new stadium, I think it's understated of how much
of
a building block that will be for your future as like a revenue generator. But like on the field success.
Yeah, like in the sporting aspect.
He has blood on his hands.
I'm sorry, he does.
You know, like remember all those players he signed after selling Gareth Bale, and like the most, like I think one of them was one of them Luka Modric? I don't remember. Or maybe this is after. But that included like Adebayor, Roberto Soldado, like.
It's ballers.
Like these were, it was like almost like 8-10 players and almost all of them flopped. Like Roberto Soldado was a generational flop for Tottenham.
Yeah.
I remember those days, man. I think apparently, I was reading up on this, last fall, Spurs brought in a outside American advisor as like to kind of like guide them along the issue of why Tottenham was having on the field troubles.
Okay.
A bit weird to have like these like banking people to tell you that, but anyways, so I assume that this was not an overnight decision to have Daniel Levy.
Yeah, I think he's definitely been thinking about it for a long time. Yeah. One thing he did bring us though is good banter. Like this Tottenham banter era, it will never be forgotten. And wherever they go next, if they end up like actually winning things now without Daniel Levy, we will never forget this era.
No, we never will.
Yeah.
We absolutely never will. I do think Tottenham are turning a little bit of a corner with Thomas Frank.
The tides are shifting for sure.
They'll have a new board in. I don't think they're going to sell the club, but those rumors are circulating. We're going to see how that goes. Yeah. All right. Another piece of news before we get into a little bit of a European roundup and then our goat of every single country is just breaking in the past couple of hours. The Premier League dropped their yearly shortlist of Premier League Hall of Famers. If you're not aware how this format works, basically every single year, about 12 to 15 names comes out as list of nominees for the Premier League Hall of Fame. And then some sort of like board or something votes on, I believe it's like two of them to actually end up in the Hall of Fame. So there's like 15 names here, I believe. 13 of them were on the list like, last year as well.
That just means that if you're not nominated, if you're not inducted 1 year, you'll end up being in the Hall of Fame at some point.
So 8 plus 7. So 16 names here. 13 of them were on the list last year. I mean, like, you say that, but it's like...
Is it a player vote? Is it a fan vote? What is it?
That's a good question. Keep you
I think it's a fan vote because I remember when it was first introduced, I think it was around 2021 or 2022, one of the two. When it was first introduced, I remember going on the Premier League app to check my FPL, of course, and it told me to vote. I don't remember who I voted for, but I think I'm pretty sure it's a fan vote.
So,
which is kind of, I don't know if I like that.
What I'm seeing here is in 2024, three people made it. In 2023, 5 people made it. In 2022, there's 8 people that made it. And then in 2021, it was another 8. So they're kind of like decreasing the amount of people making it in every single year,
okay,
which is odd. But let's go through the list, Antoine, you just tell me, rapid fire, if this player deserves to be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, shit.
And, like, this is, like, high bar, okay? The kind of names that they're alongside. Alan Shearer, Thierry Henry, Eric Cantona, Roy Keane, Frank Lampard, Bergkamp, Gerrard, Beckham, Rooney, Aguero, Drogba, list goes on and on and on.
We got some players up here.
We got a high bar, okay? So you just tell me straight up yes or no if they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. Versus Sol Campbell.
I'd say yes.
Michael Carrick.
Yeah.
Jermaine Defoe.
I don't know.
I say no.
Yeah.
TFC legend. But no.
Tell me what you think after I say my answer.
I don't know, like,
you compare the names. Like, of course, Defoe, like, in his time was a great Premier League player.
Yeah.
But
he was never world class, was he? Yeah. No. Patrice Evra, though.
Yeah.
Yep. Cesc Fabregas.
Also.
You could argue his prime wasn't spent in the Premier League.
Yeah. He's such a good player, though. He is such a good player.
Les Ferdinand, before our time. Let's
Uninformed,
be real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Robbie Fowler.
Again.
Probably the same. Eden Hazard.
I think he deserves it, yeah.
I believe he deserves it. Yeah. Gary Neville.
Yeah, also.
Michael Owen.
Yes. How is he not in? That's crazy.
I don't know, man. But these are probably the names that were like.
Okay, so I think he'll from so far, I think he's the favorite.
Teddy Sheringham. For a time. And then these four, I mean, David Silva. Yaya Toure. Edwin van der Sar. And Nemanja Vidic.
Dude, we have some competition here.
I don't know how.
So
only two
players?
Like two or three of these players.
Okay, Michael Owen. Oh, this is hard.
Vidic.
I think Vidic.
Yeah, Vidic.
I think Michael Owen.
Dude, I don't know, man.
It's two or three.
I think it's two.
Yeah, I think that's what
I'm going for. The two winners will be announced, dude. Like, this is tough.
Michael Owen and Vidic, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No Hazard. No Gary Neville.
Yeah, but that's for another year. It's like, again, like you could include all these players.
Yeah, but then
now.
next year, you don't know. Like, maybe like De Bruyne will be up for it.
Mm.
You know? Maybe
I see.
You know, like there are people leaving the Premier League who are legends either way. Right. Like, who else even is there that like hasn't even been nominated yet?
True.
Harry Kane, dude.
Do you think there's players currently playing in the? Actually, well, the answer is yes. But like an Erling Haaland, if he retires tomorrow from the Premier League,
probably be a couple years before they nominate him.
But you think he'll end up being nominated at some point if he retires tomorrow?
If he retires tomorrow, ooh. No, I don't think so. I think he needs to do another year or two of it. Okay, let's move on to international break rundown, Antoine. And I want to start, if you don't mind, with your country.
Let's do it.
How are you feeling about France just in general at the moment?
I'm feeling relatively good. If you know me and France, every international break, it always changes. One international break, I'm here. The other, I'm down here, then I'm in the middle. I'm very volatile with how I feel with this French national team. But from what I saw against Ukraine, which is probably the best team in our group between them, Iceland, and Azerbaijan, I really like what I saw. Ukraine isn't a great team, but I'd say they're like a table two team.
Yep.
Right? The first half was very, very good. We came off the front foot. Like, we played so good in the first half. And then the second half was a little worse. We let Ukraine kind of play on the ball for the first 15 minutes of the second half. And then before that goal, that Mbappe goal in the 80th minute, where he absolutely kills Zabarnyi, by the way.
Mm.
I don't know if you've seen the goal, but it's a one-on-one with Zabarnyi, and he just kills him and then falls. You know it's almost a trademark shot for Mbappe now. The fall when he shoots.
Oh, yeah.
You've definitely seen it before. He's so good at that.
Yeah.
Like off-balance shots. He's really good at that. So he did that. So all in all, I thought the performance was really good, especially in the first half. This starting 11 that Didier Deschamps put out, I really liked. And I think it can seriously be the starting 11 for the World Cup. That double pivot with Tchouameni and Manu Koné, man.
Mm.
Oh, my goodness. Mm. It is dangerous. It is very good.
Because the alternative there is, like, an Adrian Rabiot? Or...
Yeah, like, I'm past the Rabiot shit. I'm sorry.
Of course, dude. You're past the Rabiot shit, like, a couple years ago. Maybe Kefan Taram would be an alternative there.
Yeah, but, like, I think the way they complement each other is so, it's so beneficial for the French national team.
Yeah.
Manu Koné, man, like, I've said my praises for this player before for the French national team when he first started bursting onto the scene. He's like he's the kind of guy that's having the career for France that I thought Camavinga would have. He's on the trajectory that I thought Camavinga would be on with the French national team. Like, this is a guy that in less than a year has almost cemented a spot in the first team for France. Every time he's on the ball, it's positive play. And he does it for Roma too, which goes under the radar for me in the grand scheme of football talk, in my opinion, because I don't see a lot of people talking about Manu Kone like that. But every time he's on the ball, it's positive. He always looks to find a pass. He, even defensively, he's very strong, strong on his feet, strong in the challenges. I really see almost no flaws in his game. Sometimes he can, you know, have a brain fart here and there and forget, you know, where he's positioned or kind of like get complacent in the game at certain moments of the game. But I think with time, that'll get fixed up.
It's actually crazy to me how France has had on paper the best team in the world for nearly the past decade. That's insane to me. The amount of depth you guys have. Like, you guys, like, I was pissed off that Lenny Yoro is in your under 21 squad. Just the fact that he's in your under 21s is fucking crazy. Yeah. And speaks to the level of depth you have in every single position. Yeah. Especially as you move further up the field. I mean, like, a front four of Mbappe, Barcola, Lycée Doué is unfair.
Unbelievable.
Bro. Unfair.
And then you have Ekitike, who would probably come off the bench by the World Cup. Yeah,
Ekitike come off the bench. Oh my God. Magnus Akliouche as well. Ousmane Dembele, who didn't even freaking start in this game, and he's probably going to win the Ballon d'Or.
He will.
It's just unfair, bro. Yeah. It's just unfair. Marcus Thuram as well, one of the best strikers in Europe last year.
And like, the defensive sector too is, like, we remember at the Euro 2024, the biggest praise for the French national team was their defense. Like, we were talking about how they weren't playing very good football, but defensively they were so sound.
Yeah.
And now we're almost ignoring this defense because look at the firepower that there is up the pitch.
It's just insane.
It's insane.
This is a little bit of a tangent. You have to forgive me. I was listening to Michael Owen. Rare, amazing take from Michael Owen. But
I think I saw that video too.
He was talking about why England do so well in international youth competitions and why they can't translate that success to senior team success. And we think of, like, you know, Liga, the Bundesliga, probably unfairly at some points, as farmers' leagues. But what that means is that all of these young players coming through,
they all play together.
They all play together and they all have a chance for senior team football. Like, take like a Harvey Elliott versus like a Magnus Akliouche, for example.
Okay.
You know, one is, you know, getting, you know, 25, 30 appearances every year coming off the bench for Liverpool. Great team, great environment. Don't get me wrong. But Akliouche is starting week in, week out.
He's the main.
Has responsibility and is therefore developing at such a better level to where maybe in a couple of years, Liverpool are going to buy him. You know, and like, you look at the top teams in the Premier League and there's so much talent from top to bottom that there's almost no room to implement these up and coming gems for England. And France in Ligue 1, you know, when there's an up and coming player for Toulouse, respectfully, there's a lot more room on that team for him. And what that means for you and your national team is that these guys at 21 have the experience of like an English 25 or 26 year old.
Yeah. No, it's actually crazy. It makes so much sense when you put it like that. Like, these young French players coming up in Ligue 1 have a lot of experience when they're called up.
Yeah.
I mean, Magnus Akliouche is probably the prime example of that right now. He's now the main focal point or the main asset in this Monaco attack. And he's had an incredible 2024, very good 2023, and now he officially gets his call up for the French national team. Like, the trajectory is, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Talk to me about Elise.
Oh, dude, Michael Elise can have a sneaky Ballon d'Or campaign in him. I think Michael Elise's season, it'll be very good from how he started. Like, you look at what he's doing for Bayern right now, probably the most creative player in that team without Jamal Musiala right now. He's taking his responsibilities in that Bayern team, and now he's taking his responsibilities in this French national team, where it took him a while to adapt. Let's not forget, because when he was first called up to the French national team, he wasn't having the best games, right? It took him a minute to adapt. He doesn't speak French very fluently.
Yep.
But now, the way that he's adapted his game for this French national team playing in that 10 role, I think if you combine his season, his good season that he's going to have for Bayern, and then the World Cup season that's coming up, the World Cup year, you combine both those, if he has great, if he plays great throughout these tournaments, plus the Champions League,
mm-hmm.
don't be surprised if Michael Olise finishes top three of the Ballon d'Or next season.
I mean, this guy played for Reading.
Yeah.
This guy, like, this is, like, he's basically, I mean, like, obviously, your heritage is your heritage.
Of course.
But, like, he's not, like, an out-and-out, like, Frenchman. Yeah. I think he's from South London.
I think it's
London.
His mom that's French.
Is he? I think he's a South London
He's from South London, yeah.
Yeah. It's just...
You see the interview? He's like, talk me through the goal. I took the ball, and I shot, and I scored in it.
That's a great fucking accent for me. I mean, this guy's playing in a front four with Mbappe, Barkla, and Doué, and he is leading.
Yeah.
And he's leading that attack.
I almost want to say he's almost the replacement, the perfect replacement for Antoine Griezmann.
Mm.
And that is such a compliment to him.
Mm-hmm.
He has matured so much. His football has matured so much that now we can seriously start having these conversations of world beater. Is he really a world beater? And I think he is. I think when the season ends, he'll be looked at as one of the very best players in the world if he isn't already.
Absolutely, I agree.
And then Mbappe on top of that. I said before that I was going to be very critical of Mbappe this season. And that's because I think he knows what's at stake for him this season.
Mm.
I think this is a legacy-defining season for Kylian Mbappe. And
absolutely.
He knows what's at stake, and he'll want to carry this form that he's on right now. I think he sees the World Cup coming. He can become, I think, undoubtedly the best World Cup player of all time.
Oof.
Genuinely.
Jesus.
I mean, is that really a debate? If you win the World Cup with France this year, I think there's almost no debate that he's the best World Cup player of all time. And then on the back of that, you can win your first Ballon d'Or in a window that is rapidly closing, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He knows what's at stake this season, and he'll deliver.
I hope he does, dude.
Yeah. Because the way that he started the season, I mean, I was very critical of him with the defensive contributions and the off the ball work. You know that conversation. It's a whole different field, right?
Of course.
But if he can continue this attacking impact that he's had so far, it's also a Ballon d'Or year for him.
Talk to me about, I've heard that PSG is upset with French Federation because Doué and Mbappé is injured. Talk to me about that.
I mean, Deschamps has blood on his hands. That's what it is.
Oh.
Deschamps has blood on his hands. Oh, first of all, apparently, like, everybody in PSG is injured right now from this international break. Even our fucking coach, dude. Did you see Luis Enrique fell off a bike?
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Sorry. The listeners got a...
That's okay.
Got an earful there.
Go on.
He fell off his bike, and he has to get a surgery on his clavicle. Is that a thing?
Jesus. Like his collarbone?
Collarbone, that's what
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Holy
shit. It's crazy. But Deschamps has blood on his hands. For those of you that don't know, Dembele against Toulouse comes off injured, holding his hamstring, and is questionable to join the French national team for their international games, for their World Cup qualifiers, right? It's deemed that he is fit to train and maybe play with the team a week after, so a couple days before the game against Ukraine. And so he starts on the bench against Ukraine, which is fine, right? Which is perfect. I don't know. Sorry, guys. The voice is killing me right now, but I'm powering through.
Go on.
I don't know what Deschamps... I don't know what goes through Deschamps' mind when taking Doué off and putting Dembélé on instead, who is freshly injured, has a game against Barcelona, an important game against Barcelona in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Has a pivotal season again for him after, like, a Ballon d'Or defending season almost. Yep. If he doesn't win it, how can he react? If he does win it, how can he defend his season, his Ballon d'Or winning campaign? So it's a pivotal season for Dembélé, and you sub him on in the 46th minute after you know he's been injured, he's not fit to play, and you have a guy like Magnès Akliouche on the bench who can start who can get his international debut in a game that is not killed, but managed in the first half. I don't understand why you come to that conclusion. Mm. I don't get it. Mm. It doesn't make sense to me.
You still Deschamps out?
I've been, I don't want to say I'm Deschamps out. I don't think I've been Deschamps out. I've been very, I've been Deschamps out. But it's more like I've never really been absorbed by the style of play that France have. It's never really moved me.
Okay.
Under Deschamps, ever. Even when we won the World Cup. It never has moved me.
Yeah, he's not the most positive manager, is
he? Exactly, right? It's more defensive with him. But his management on that aspect of the game where you risk Dembele, you risk those injured players, I don't like that a lot.
I get it. Okay. Anything else on France?
I don't think so.
Okay. I'm going to move on to England for a little bit. Do you want to take five?
I'm good.
Okay. This dude, round of applause.
Right I'm now. Not good, but I'm good.
This guy is commitment, bro. This is commitment. Okay, let's move on to England, where they beat Andorra 2-0. Not that this is the most like earth-shattering thing. Andorra is ranked number 174th in the world, but Tuchel's men are starting to take shape before the World Cup. I mean, like, we think of these games as like friendlies, you know, this game could have been an email type of matches here. But when you really think about it, like, every team only has 5 or 6 games until the World Cup.
Yeah.
Like, the countdown is on, right?
It's coming very rapidly.
So whether they're playing against France or whether they're playing against Andorra, the lineup and what Tuchel is trying to do matters, and there is stuff to dissect. And I really like what he's doing with the midfield pivot. And I think that's a problem he's starting to solve that Southgate couldn't really get right.
Yeah, that's a very good
point. In the Euros, the big problem was like, okay, he had Declan Rice kind of sitting, and then he had Trent there in the midfield for a little bit. He went to Conor Gallagher for a little bit, and then he ended up settling on Colby Mainoo. Mm-hmm. There were some bright sparks, but none of those worked long-term, and it was clear that his initial idea was just a failure, and that was one of the reasons why England ultimately failed, right? Now, they have Elliot Anderson as more of like a midfield.
And what a player.
What a player, man.
What a player, man.
What a player. This... I believe, what is he, 22 years old? Balling out for Forest already this year.
The start
I know
of the season
early.
Is insane. Mm-hmm. It's insane. To get that England call-up from what you did at Nottingham Forest in the first 3 games of the season is great. And then to start, and obviously everyone bosses the midfield against Andorra, but to... For some, get man of the match in that game is very impressive.
I was really shocked when Newcastle sold him a couple years back. Really shocked. Guy was on the radar for
I think they had
well.
To.
I think that's what PSR. It was.
Yeah.
Awkward. Okay. as a lone six or kind of like the deeper midfielder of a pivot, it allows Rice to push up further forward, kind of like the role that he wants to do for Arsenal this year. And it gives Eze, or whoever's at the 10, more freedom to create, and I'm liking the look of this team a lot more.
I've actually seen, I think it was Rory, the Chelsea fan.
Yep.
He was actually criticizing this English team.
Really?
Yeah. He was saying that the football, it wasn't very enthralling. It wasn't very appealing.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't think you're going to get that from England.
But that's what wins tournaments.
Yeah.
It's just... Those 1-0,
and that was the whole
wins.
Argument for Southgate in the first place,
yeah,
right?
I guess it was. But then another example is France with Deschamps. I mean, we were just talking about how their football has never been really appealing, but France win tournaments. France get to the latter stages of tournaments.
And again, like what I like going back to like how little time you have to prepare for a World Cup, like you underestimate how difficult it is to implement a system that players that don't play with each other can actually learn quickly. That's why so many national teams play a conservative system, because that makes so much more sense.
Yeah.
Right? If you just told the lads, go out there and express yourselves, then like these guys that don't have the chemistry to play together most of the time are not, that's not going to go well unless you're Spain. Like,
we're going to get onto Spain.
Yeah, we're going to get onto Spain in a couple minutes here. But yeah, again, England against Andorra, not like the craziest thing. They play Serbia tomorrow at 2:45. I think that's going to be a much better barometer for what to expect from this England side. Ultimately, they're certainly not my favorites going into the World Cup, but I'm pretty high on them.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you're always high on England to reach the latter stages of the tournament.
For sure.
Right? I think Madueke had a great game.
Mm.
I've seen a lot of praise of his game against Andorra. He has a very interesting season ahead of him, right?
Yeah.
With Arsenal, kind of being that backup signing to Saka, but then also wants to prove himself to be that starter.
Yeah.
And then can he also make the World Cup team for England?
Well, just like he is, just like the case is for Arsenal, when Saka's back, he probably won't have that starting spot.
Exactly.
A rash on the left caught some heat.
I heard.
There's some, is he like worthy of starting for England? I still think
so. Is he just washed, perhaps?
Who else would they have as like an option on the left? Grealish is balling out right now.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know if you're making that argument.
Give it time.
Anthony Gordon, maybe. Morgan Rogers is more of a 10. Jared Bowen is more of a right winger or a striker. Ollie Watkins is a striker. You know, there's no one from this England selection that's jumping out at me. But maybe Phil Foden, you can certainly make an argument for, though. No, Foden did not make the team. He's never done lick in an England shirt, so wow. I don't blame it.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. They also have a wealth of talent as well, which, you know.
Yeah.
Dan Burn started in this game. That's crazy, man.
I seen that.
Okay, let's move on to Spain, I suppose.
Sure. You want to hit Germany losing to Slovakia real quick?
Oh, we could. They lost to Slovakia.
Lost to Slovakia 2-0.
Oh, yes.
And they were backs against the wall against Northern Ireland. They needed a win.
Yes.
To
not looking
almost
good
salvage
right
their qualifier. And then they got the win. Did you see Florian Wirtz's free kick?
Yes.
Insane.
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 If Blake was here, he'd be like, can't do that for Liverpool. Yeah, Nagelsmann, I'm worried.
You are? Really?
Not like, you know, alarm bells ringing, mm-hmm. like he's going to get the sack. But if you're Germany watching this, then...
I'd like to hear a German fan's point of view on this German national team right now, on the status and the state of this German national team right
Lost
now.
Lost 3 games in a row against Portugal, France, and Slovakia. Mm-hmm. Backs up against the wall, like you said, against Northern Ireland, who are, by the way, ranked 71st. In the entire world.
Nice.
Like, you should be handling them. I agree. And it was a closer game than the scoreline would suggest, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to figure out about this Germany team. Also, didn't they sack... Was it before the last World Cup or right before 2018 where they sacked their manager, like, right before the tournament? Was it before...
I think it was before Euros. The Euros.
Right before the Euros. Something like that. Right. They fired Flick and brought in Nagelsmann really last minute.
But it's been a while now, so, like, is there really an excuse now?
Yeah. I mean, like, I think, like, the German team in general is so odd. It's like...
Like the players, you mean?
Yeah, it's like a transition period for them, right? Like, their best... Like, what's their center back trio right now? Like, Jonathan Tah, Anton, Schlotterbeck, maybe?
Yeah.
Rudiger. But Schlotterbeck and Rudiger have had injury issues. So
I guess
beyond
Jonathan
that,
Tah is probably their best center back then.
Who?
Jonathan Tah.
Jonathan Tah. Yeah, I mean, like beyond that, you're going to Robin Koch, who I mean I can't claim to know
Robin
much
Koch?
About. Yeah.
Leeds legend.
Oh, that guy.
Yep.
Oh, okay. Playing for Frankfurt now.
Okay.
And then you have David Rahm. He's a left back.
He's a left back. Yeah.
He's a left back. Yeah. You don't have anybody else. You don't have anybody else. Mittelstadt on the left. Kimmich on the right. Pavlovich is coming through as well, obviously.
That's
Goretzka. And then your front three is currently... Sané is there. Wirtz is there, which is obviously good.
Voltamata.
And then maybe Voltamata.
Yeah.
Adeyemi coming off the bench.
It is a weird transition, Nabry, almost transitional period for Germany, right?
It is very odd.
Yeah.
So, like, it's not beyond the realm of possibility, but mm-hmm. Nagelsmann hasn't injected me with confidence.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they lost to Portugal, let's not forget, for the first time in like 20 years.
And France. But not for the first time. We handle them quite periodically.
That's why I brought out the Portugal result. Yes. Shall we go to Spain now?
Sure.
Okay. Spain are scary, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, my God.
This
Spanish national team is terrifying.
Yeah.
It is terrifying. If there's anybody that's telling you that Spain aren't the favorites coming into this World Cup, they're lying through the skin of their teeth.
I was going to ask you.
They are Spain is by far and away the favorites to win this World Cup. I'm sorry. From the football that they're playing to the depth in their squad, I don't see a close second right now.
This is a better team than the team that won the Euros right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's insane. I mean, what makes this team so good is that they're not only backed up in almost every position and they have talent flowing from every aspect of the pitch, every part of the pitch, but their footballing identity, like the Spanish way of playing football, is probably the most advanced way of playing football in all of the world.
Yep.
And this group of players have absolutely mastered it.
It's not even like the classic tiki-taka football of Spain when they won the three-peat or won the Euros in the World Cup, then the Euros again. It's a much more direct style of football.
Yeah. But they can also play that tiki-taka style of football.
They could. Which absolutely is crazy. They could.
Like, and on top of that, they also have that threat in transition with Lamine Yamal and Nico Williams. We saw it a little bit against Turkey. Like, they were controlling most of the game, but when Turkey had a few opportunities here and there, their threat in transition is insane. It's like they're elite at every part of the game.
Bro, their best out-and-out striker is Alvaro Morata, or Ferran Torres, if you want to make that argument. Roger didn't even start this game. Like, it's just,
against Turkey?
Against Turkey, yeah, he didn't even start.
Yeah, he didn't start.
Like, well, yeah, you got Zubimendi instead. Zubimendi. So
it's insane. Oyarzabal at striker has done wonders. Mikel Merino
scoring a hat trick just cause.
Mikel Merino casually scoring a hat trick.
Cucurella on the left. Pedro Porro on the right.
It's disgusting. Lenormand
and Dean Huijsen now. They have
Dean
Huijsen.
Dean Huijsen can become a top five center back very soon in my
life. Yes. Like, very soon, dude.
It's insane. And then they have Kubarsi next to him.
That oh my God. I forgot about Kubarsi.
If you're any other national team right now and you look at this Spain team, you almost don't even want to compete.
I remember coming into the Euros, I was like the highs of Spain, like the bright sparks they have in the team, like Pedri, like Yamal, like Gavi at the time, especially, like super, super high. But they had so many question marks at center back, at striker, how it was all going to fit. Luis de la Fuente was a question mark. Now, all of those questions have been answered and more.
And more.
And now they're scary. And now they look like, as we're just coming off of the dominance of Spain when we were kids, we're going to have another era of that, and it is terrifying.
Honestly, I'm not complaining, though, because
I am.
I'm not going to lie. This national team is the national team that, over these last few years, I've enjoyed watching the most. Like, if I take my French bias aside and I remain completely neutral, you give me one game that I want to, one team that I want to watch, I'm picking Spain every day of the week.
Who beat him in Nations League, though?
Yeah, but who was in control in most part of the game?
They weren't in control.
Not in control, but
you cannot make the argument that they in the second half to win that game.
No, I know. I don't think they deserve to win that game. No, that's not what I'm saying.
They did not.
But in the second half, they had more opportunities than you guys. Controlled more of the game.
You're remembering a different game than I am.
Maybe I am, but it's like good luck getting the ball off of these guys.
Yep.
I don't see any national team that can beat these guys. In getting the ball out, like there's a term for it. I
totally
forget.
Agree,
but it's insane. Like Huijsen Kubarsi is going to trauma. Like I just thought of it right
just
now.
Unfair.
It's gonna traumatize. It's just so unfair, many people. Bro. So many people. If this Spanish national team was in the Champions League as a club,
ooh,
and you duplicated the players that played for their clubs. Yeah.
That's
where would they finish?
I don't think they're having the same success, to be honest.
You don't think so?
I think clubs are much, much better on average than countries.
You know what's crazy?
Because of the chemistry and the systems and et cetera.
I think they win the entire thing.
You think Spain as a club in the Champions League win the Champions League?
I think Spain as a club in the Champions League.
I think that's crazy.
Win the entire
That's
tournament.
Crazy.
I think they win the entire
That is
tournament.
Crazy. That's crazy.
I don't think you understand how good this team
that's
is.
That's crazy.
How
I think
crazy?
If you duplicated this team, if you duplicated these players and they came up against Barcelona, Barcelona wins.
You think so?
I think Real Madrid will. Not Real Madrid.
I think if you duplicate these players, they play against Barcelona two legs, I think Spain comes out with the win.
If they play Liverpool, you think so too?
Yes.
Arsenal?
Yeah.
But these are.
You don't understand how good this team is.
I do fully understand how good this team is, dude.
I don't think you grasp it.
I fully understand how good this team is. They just came against a Turkey team. He made the quarterfinals of the Euros in themselves. They're a really good team with some very bright sparks. everybody was giving them a shot in this game, and they absolutely walloped them. I fully understand. But I think on average, the average club...
In today's game, yes. That's completely what you're saying.
Because of the management, yes, of the tactics, of the team chemistry and cohesion. Just because you're of the same nationality. It's not FIFA with everybody on yellow lines automatically.
I know.
Like, but you could have somebody playing out in the Bundesliga, somebody playing out in Serie A, and they're the same nationality, but they're used to two completely different brands of football.
Julian, this team has mastered everything. Every aspect of the game, everything. Doesn't matter, every tactical aspect of everything. They're threatening in possession, out of possession, in transition. I don't think there's a flaw in the Spanish national team.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like there's a flaw because of the competition they're playing. But I think just like, you know, if you stuck Barcelona down in the championship, they would look unbeatable.
Well, no shit.
But once you raise the level of competition, some chinks show in the armor.
Oh.
Is that the word?
I don't know if that's the word. But I see what you mean. It's a very interesting debate for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's such a compliment to them that they would win the entire tournament. Because as you said, in today's game, it's almost as if club football is much more advanced than international football.
Can confirm that was a word.
That was a word. Okay, okay. Good. Thank We're God. Good. We're not getting canceled today.
All right.
But no, I think this Spanish team is suited perfectly to win the Champions League as a club.
You think Oyarzabal as striker is winning the Champions League?
I think you don't understand the impact that Oyarzabal has on this team as striker.
Oh, I do. He just got a hat-trick of assists. Yeah. I see it.
Yeah.
He just scored the winner in the Euros. But like...
He's probably their most underrated player, I'd say.
Oh, no, I think most people appreciate the impact of Oyarzabal on this team. But, man, I don't know. I think the difference between clubs and countries is almost unseen because, obviously, they can't and won't play against each other. But the level of the Champions League is more than you'll see in the Euros just because of the team cohesion and tactic levels, bro.
I think you have some sort of club attachment, club football attachment that you need to let go.
Like, these are well-oiled machines. Like, I don't know if this team...
If you're telling me Spain isn't a well-oiled machine...
Okay, like, do they beat PSG?
Yeah. I think they beat PSG.
Do they beat treble-winning Man City?
Oh, we're going back. I don't know.
Oh, come on. The hesitation even, bro. Come on.
Yeah, no, I think they do. If they beat PSG, then they beat Man City.
Okay, this is hurting me now, bro. This is hurting me now. This was supposed to be a quick roundup, but that's crazy, bro. That's fucking insane.
I don't think it's even that crazy of a take. Like, I've had worse takes. I've had crazier takes.
You had crazier takes. That one was just like shot for that one from the hip. I wasn't ready for that one. Oh, man.
Yeah, I was just asking a question.
Damn, that's a crazy question. Okay, let's go quick on Italy and on Portugal and then on South America and then on North America. Oh my God, we have so much to talk about.
Let's skip some of these.
Let's go. Let's go Italy first. They had a really good start. They're having a good start.
One more thing, I'm sorry.
Go on,
I'm sorry. Pedri.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Like, you can't just skim past Pedri. I'm sorry. Like, you know his celebration?
Yes.
His celebration is him looking for a better midfielder than him. There is no better midfielder in the world than Pedri. And anyone telling you that there is, I'm looking at you.
There's no better midfielder in the world.
If I recall correctly, 2 weeks ago, you sat in this chair and told me that Arda Güler should be compared to Pedri.
No, don't do this to me right now. I'll play the clip right now. I'll play the goddamn clip right now. You're trying to tell me what I said.
You told me that we can have this conversation.
No, I'm saying that in the years to come, it will turn into a conversation, but that is not a conversation right now. And I said, and I quote, I am not saying for 1 second that Arda Güler is comparable to Pedri right
Thank
now.
Thank you, because he's not.
He's not.
He is not.
He's
man.
Not, bro.
This player right here, he transcends football. He might be the best player in the world over Lamine Yamal. For what he brings to the game, for what he brings to his team, the Spanish national team and Barcelona, consistent 8 out of 10s, consistent big impact, He consistently has huge impact on every game he plays in. Whenever Barca are in the slumps, who's that guy that to come save them, to come pull them out of those slumps? It's Pedri. Whenever you need somebody to show you a spark of brilliance, to ignite something in the game, in the build-up or in the attacking phase, you look at one man and one man only, and it's Pedri. And I don't think any midfielder in the world comes close to him right now.
Totally agree. I'm not letting you have that.
Do you? Okay.
All right, you're putting words in my mouth.
Now. I'm not putting words. You.
I know you're trying to go for the clip, but you're trying to.
Those words came out of your mouth.
I did not say.
No, they came out of your mouth.
I told you what words came out of my mouth, and people can go back.
Yeah, they can go back two episodes and listen to the Arda Güler glaze that you and little.
Was it not warranted?
It was. Yeah, it was warranted. Sure.
Yes.
You are a big Arda Güler fan.
Yeah, I'm also a big Pedri fan.
Are you?
I am.
Okay.
I've watched his GQ, 10 Things I Can't Live Without. All right. I had to turn on the subtitles, but I watched that.
Yeah, what can't you live without? What a fake fan.
A comb. Yep.
Really? I feel like he doesn't need one.
It's like a PlayStation or something. I don't even know.
No, I'm clocking you. I'll get you.
I'll get you, bro. Look, if Arda Güler puts up the actually worthy performances, I'm not saying I'll jump the gun.
He's also on the other side of the pitch, by the way, Arda Güler.
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
Fully aware of that.
Fully aware, by the way.
If they swap places, I don't know how differently
places, Pedri's brilliance is outlined much more than Arda Güler's brilliance was outlined yesterday in Turkey's team.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Arda Güler put up a stinker, I won't lie. Yeah,
he didn't have many great moments. I think Yildiz was the guy that played relatively well for Turkey.
Relatively. Yeah, in air quotations. Very you got it. That's a stretch. Okay, now tell me about Italy.
You want me to tell you about Italy?
Well, they've had a good start under Gattuso.
Yeah.
They won. Who did they win against? It was against
Estonia.
Estonia.
If the memory serves me correct.
Yeah, it was number 126 in the world, Estonia. Retegi grabbing two goals. Moise Keane with a goal.
I almost forgot Retegi existed.
Oh, yeah.
Since his move to Al-Qadisiyya.
I think the biggest thing in this game was the amount of XG. That's what's standing out to me, the amount of XG that Italy put up against Estonia. And yes, it's Estonia. Yes, we shouldn't take it too seriously. But like, you know, you could have a five-nil score line that's maybe more flattering than your performance deserves. But you absolutely can't say that about this team. Like the chance creation is there. I didn't watch this game. I won't lie to you.
Yeah, I can't say I have either.
But just looking here at the numbers and the signs, this is given shades of the Italy that won the Euros because of like the actual positive football that I'm seeing.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that we said when Gattuso came in, and that everyone was saying, to be honest, is that he needs to bring an identity to this Italian national team.
Mm.
An identity that had been lost for quite a bit of time since that Euros win. And an identity that seemed like they couldn't find, right? Mm. It was very hard to find that identity in that Italian national team post Mancini, post Euros win.
Yeah.
And if he can stay on this trajectory, because he's a very big personality. He's a guy that he's not afraid to yell at the best players in the world, at the best players on his team if they play poorly.
And so I feel like
instill that mentality into the players, then I think it'll work well.
The players will respect that.
Exactly.
As well,
he's a figure that you respect in the locker room.
Because you have to.
Exactly.
Anyways. Yeah. Shout out to them. Real quick, let's go to Portugal as well, who won 5-0 against Armenia.
Yep.
You want to talk about a high XG? 6.3.
Wow.
Yeah. I sent this, I don't know if this is TMI, but I sent this over to Raf, our good Armenian friend. I sent him the score line. I said, hold that. And
that's crazy, by the way.
I know. I'm just messing
beating
with
a dead horse, isn't it?
I'm just messing with him. But yeah, his response made me a little bit sad. I'm trying to like pull it up here. Where is it? Yeah, he said, congrats, you beat up on a country where half the team is fighting on the front lines. Are you proud of yourself now?
That's crazy. That's crazy. Great response, I will say.
I said yes.
Julian, brother.
Ronaldo grabbing two goals. João Felix grabbing two goals. It was João Cancelo with the other. My dad loved to point out that all five goals coming from Saudi Pro League players.
What a revolution.
Game is gone. Game is so, so gone. Solid performance. But again, you can't take much out of it. It is Armenia. They don't have the bright sparks of like a Henrik Mkhitaryan of days gone by. They're ranked number 105 in the world. I think that might be a little bit flattering to them, honestly. And Ronaldo loves a little brace against an Armenia and Estonia. You know, one of those.
Is he back?
No, he's not back. let's be real. So I don't know what to take out of this Portugal team. We've looked good in these qualifiers. We've looked good in these friendlies leading up to tournaments. We've looked good with Ronaldo at striker and lead up to these tournaments. And you're like, okay, maybe this could actually work a little bit. And then the actual tournament comes and you're reminded why a 40-year-old shouldn't be starting for a team that wants to win the World Cup.
Is it just the harsh reality or?
I'm not as much on the train as I was in like 2022, 2024.
That's crazy though.
Because like Gonzalo Ramos hasn't like turned into the world beater I thought he could turn into.
Yeah.
But I still think, I don't want this to be a hot take, but I do think we are a better team still with Gonzalo Ramos starting for us. I don't think that's crazy to say.
I think there's a lot of emotional attachment in fans when talking about this subject. And people,
I have to be careful with it. Yeah.
Yeah, people don't want to come to the conclusion and come to the realization that Ronaldo actually might be detrimental to this Portuguese team.
There is nobody on planet Earth that wants to see Ronaldo lift the World Cup more than I do. But I'm just saying that if we want to maximize the chances of that, I think in the biggest games he shouldn't be starting.
Yeah. And I don't think
that's not to say he shouldn't be coming off the bench. That's not to say he doesn't have an impact on this team. That's not to say that he's the fact that he's even good enough to be playing internationally at 40 years old is a testament to his longevity and quality as a player on an all-time scale. But should he be starting against the best teams? I don't know. And a brace against Armenia doesn't move the needle for me, obviously.
What about the goal against Spain?
The goal against Spain was good. But you want me to be honest? I think we came out in those games scoring goals almost kind of... This sounds harsh.
Say it, man. Don't be scared.
I think we won those games despite him in the lineup at times, you know?
You think he was just...
I it gave me a little bit of hope of like, okay, he can have an impact on this. But I can't ignore the biggest signals for me was that in the past two big tournaments, we have come up short and it has been because we have stuck with Ronaldo. Like 90 minutes through every single group stage game in the Euros, including 90 minutes against Georgia, we were already through because he wanted his goal. Mm. Like, it cost us. It's politics and it costs us and it hurts me. And it's like...
Yeah. Do you think Portugal can win the World Cup if he's in that team? Starting?
You know what? Like, he could start, but when the going gets tough, I want Gonzalo Ramos to come on in the 60th minute. Or I want Gonzalo Ramos starting and Ronaldo to come on in the 60th minute. You know?
Yeah.
I just want there to be honest rotation. And in this game, Ronaldo did come off in the 58th, but like when the going is important and when the going gets tough, is that going to be the case? I hope it is. Mm-hmm. And I don't think this gives us any answers to that, you know?
I also don't think that's a crazy take. I think there are definitely people overreacting, obviously with that emotional attachment I was talking about.
Yeah.
But that doesn't take away anything he did for this Portuguese team, of course.
I think there are Ronaldo fans who want Portugal to win the World Cup, but want Ronaldo to win the World Cup more, okay, right?
Yeah.
But they also know that if Portugal win the World Cup without Ronaldo having the impact and being at the forefront of the reason they won the World Cup, then that asterisk is going to be there of like, yeah, Ronaldo won the World Cup, but you know, Messi won a gold medal when he was a kid. He didn't have an impact on that trophy mm-hmm. as much, you know? He got carried to it, right? They want Ronaldo to win the World Cup more than Portugal, so they want Ronaldo to be the reason they win the World Cup, right? So when you're coming at me for that, then like I think your head is in the wrong conversation.
100%.
I think your heart's in it for the wrong 100%. Reason. I want Portugal to win the World Cup, and I want Ronaldo to win the World Cup as a byproduct of that. And I think for that reason, then Gonçalo Ramos should get meaningful minutes when the going gets tough for this Portugal team. Anyways, this game was pretty much perfect. It was 10 out of 10. Our lineup looks scary, and I'm happy with this.
Perfect.
You know, back two of Ruben Dias and Gonçalo Inácio. Love it. Love it. Cancelo at right back can still do a fucking job. Nuno Mendes at left back, I love it. Vitinha, João Neves, Bruno Fernandes. Box office. And then if you don't want to play them, you have João Paulinho having a good season. You have Pedro Gonçalves always putting up good performances.
You see João Paulinho actually was ranked the best transfer, Premier League transfer this season by The Athletic.
Yeah, which is insane. Which is insane.
Yeah.
Bernardo Silva you always have. Ruben Neves you have as well. On the wing, you have Pedro Neto. You have João Felix. You have Trincão. You have Conceição. Bernardo Silva can play there, like I said. You have Rafa Leão. It's beautiful, man. It's beautiful.
Very deep squad.
I don't know how to feel. I feel hopeful.
There's some good chances of you guys doing well in the next World Cup for sure.
Chances we win it, like percentage.
Percentage, oh brother. 7?
7%?
Yeah. 6 or 7%? 10%? Around there.
Give me 10%?
Yeah.
15%? All we need is one. All we need is one.
Exactly.
Okay, real quick.
What are we at? Let's speed it up.
Almost an hour.
Okay, let's speed it up.
Okay.
Do Canada, and then we're good.
All right. Messi's last game in Argentina, we should say as well.
So sad.
This could be one of Messi's last games in an Argentina shirt, period.
Yeah, and I mean, if it is his last game in an Argentina shirt, what a way to end it off.
Yeah.
What a way to end it off. On home soil, two beautiful goals. Vintage Messi, I want to say.
If I'm Messi, I'm seriously considering not going to the World Cup.
Really?
Because he still hasn't committed to it, which tells me that, like, you know, like, he's not, like, fully wanting it. And I don't think he should want it as much because... you want it. What else is there to do, right? People's last memory of you in a World Cup is going to likely be you losing. I don't think you want that.
True.
Right? You won the Copa America after the fact. Again, like, what else does Lionel Messi have to prove in an Argentina shirt?
Yeah, I guess it is a conversation of how do you want to be remembered, right? Because if he does go to the World Cup and lose it, then as you said,
yeah,
he's going to be remembered as his last dance was him.
You know, it's losing. A Zidane problem.
It is a Zidane problem.
Zidane won a Euros and a World Cup with France, but his biggest ever moment was him coming out of retirement and having the 2006 moment.
He's still the best player in that World Cup, but it's okay.
Of course he was. Of course he was.
Yeah. Don't tie down on my goal like that.
So he says like he's worried about his health. He doesn't know if he could like be up for it, right? He'll have a tough MLS season 2 where he's trying to win that championship as well. You know, it's like, it's the health combined with the fact that he doesn't have anything else to prove in an Argentina shirt where I would not be surprised if he just doesn't play. And I wouldn't blame him for it. On the other hand, Gianni Infantino is like probably on his hands and knees begging this guy to play because FIFA can't have a tournament these days without Lionel Messi, apparently.
Yeah.
So we're going to see what happens, I guess. Shout out to Brazil. They won as well. They beat Chile 3-0.
Yeah, Estevao first goal.
Bicycle kick.
Bicycle kick from about a yard away.
Yep. just headed in at that point.
Oh my God. What are we doing?
Come on, man.
What are we doing? He's becoming a PR merchant, he is.
Yeah. USA lose to South Korea.
That's things we love to see.
Hold that.
Shout out Hyungmin Son, bro.
Pochettino's under serious pressure.
Yeah, and I'm surprised he isn't sacked by now.
I know. They only... like. You only have 5 or 6 games until the World Cup. If you want to make a change, you have to make it now. And this is like the moment where this is the most important tournament in the U.S.'s history.
I agree.
On home soil, big pressure from the Federation to be growing the game. This is a multi-decade project all leading up to 2026.
Yep.
If you go on a good run, if you make the quarters or maybe a semis, then this game skyrockets in popularity on this continent. If you go out in the group stage and these players don't perform like they have been for the past couple of World Cups, then all of the past work over the past couple of decades is rendered useless.
Yep.
It's kind of crazy when you put it like that.
It is.
And you got it. And it all lies in the hands of a former Tottenham manager.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, you got, but it's also a big name, though. Like, you signed this big name manager, quote unquote. Obviously, he's not the biggest name in the world, but he's a guy that has a history in Europe, has a history for some of the biggest clubs, right? Tottenham, PSG, right? He's been successful in these teams. So if he can't succeed for the U.S. and the men's national team,
yeah, who do you hire at that point,
bro?
Bill Belichick.
Bring Steve Kerr.
Yeah, bro. Get Steve Kerr over. Dude, oh my God. Not Ime Udoka. Celtics head coach. What's his name?
Oh, what's his
name? He's like obsessed with football, too. Yeah. He's met Pep a couple of times.
He's friends with Pep. I know what you're talking about.
Oh my God. What's it? Dude, I'm not.
I got you.
I should know this.
Joe Mazzulla.
Joe Mazzulla. How could I forget? Get Joe Mazzulla on the case.
Yeah, why not, bro?
Honestly, you just need a guy in there with a couple of tacticians around him that'll rile up the troops and get attention on the squad, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm genuinely worried if I'm the U.S. because this looks like a problem. Seriously. I know it's like you're a little bit experimental with your lineup. This is a friendly, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, also the fact, like, I don't know if you've seen the videos, but the stadium is like drowned out with South Korean chants.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So many games the U.S. have been playing on home soil, but the away fans have been making it feel like an away
game.
That's
crazy.
Yep. Wow. Same with Canada sometimes.
Yeah.
Like they were saying, well, we were playing Ivory Coast. They were saying the same thing.
Really?
You know, and that's what happens when you have such a diverse country which is great.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're going to have people with so much passion for other countries all across the thing. Not that they don't care about, you know, their homeland. But yeah, so they play Japan tomorrow, I believe. And if they lose that game, alarm bells ringing.
Yeah, they're losing.
And we are posting this clip immediately.
Okay.
And in other news, Canada beat Romania 3-0.
Good for the boys.
I'm starting to have the same feeling around Canada. Ah. I may be jumping the gun, but I'm starting to have the same feeling around Canada that I was starting to have in the lead up to the last World Cup.
Really?
Like borderline delusional hope.
Okay. But this time I think it's more realistic almost.
I think it's more realistic. We're doing the same, like it's almost like every single international window, a new face is showing himself. A new player is coming about, and you're going like, oh wow, like you could have an impact that I did not expect, right? Mm-hmm. Like Ali Ahmed,
yeah,
like there are our left winger, like has always been like on the fringes of the team for a couple of years, but against Romania, this guy was spectacular. His pressure and energy, this is the Canadian Amad Diallo I'm watching. Yeah, that's a compliment to him.
It is. I mean, I think it all comes down to, you have to praise Jesse Marsh for this.
Yes.
He's almost, I don't want to say turned around because there's been work done before him, but he now has instilled in this Canadian national team a mindset that is very good. Very good mindset.
Yeah.
Almost a killer mentality and an identity that this team needs. And it's great to have that right before the World Cup.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then Tejon Buchanan looked good as well. Like he's kind of in a weird spot, like, you know, leaving Inter, like, but doing well with Villarreal.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weird spot he's in his career. Jonathan David grabbed a goal as well. It was a banger. Nico Sigor as well at right back. He's looking really, really good. I don't know how it's going to be with him competing for a spot with Alistair Johnson. Like, I love this, man. And then you saw players out. Obviously, Alphonso Davies is still out. Moises Bombido is still out as well. So when those guys come back, those are like arguably our two best players.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this team. I'm really excited for this team. And it was a good bounce back. I mean, this is why I'm saying I don't want to get ahead of myself, because this is also like, I think July we lost to Guatemala.
Yeah, I remember that.
The 100th ranked team in the world. So I don't want to get ahead of myself. Mm. But that was on a penalty shootout.
Yeah, there was attenuating circumstances, red card, you know.
Exactly, exactly. So it depends on our group. It depends on, you know, but it depends on other circumstances.
I think
on home soil.
Round of 32.
A decent
very,
group.
Very
round
realistic.
Round of 32. Very realistic for Canada.
I think so too.
I'm excited.
I can tell.
Dude.
I can tell.
I'm really excited. I'm gonna be at that game. I'm telling you. Promise David as well. Taiwo Oluwaseyi at striker. Jonathan David. I mean, look at all these strikers we have, man.
It's great to see.
Great to see. Go Canada, man. We stand on guard for thee. Let's move on now to
let's do it.
The GOAT of every country. So the best, I guess, the greatest player of all time. For the top national teams in the world, we have 15 here, including the best teams from Europe, 9 of them. And then we have 1, 2, 3 from South America. And then we have 1, 2, 3 from North America. Okay?
Beautiful.
Starting off is Portugal.
This...
3, 2, 1, Ronaldo.
This is, like, this one in Argentina, I think we can just get off the...
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Argentina.
Ronaldo and Messi. Yeah.
Yeah. There would be arguments. Let's give.
So how about we say if they didn't exist?
If they didn't exist.
Do we have Eusebio and Maradona?
Yeah, probably.
If they didn't exist.
Fun fact about Eusebio, you know, my grandpa used to drive Eusebio around to different restaurants around Lisbon.
What the hell?
Eusebio had quite the reputation. For going to different restaurants, getting free food, and then dipping.
Really?
Yep.
He's just a dine and dash kind of guy?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
I've just earned a lot of respect. He just earned a lot of respect from me. I'm kidding.
No, he's like an icon. What can I say? Didn't win anything with Portugal, obviously, not until 2016. But a pioneer, you could say, of course. Benfica legend as much as he is a Portugal legend. And... with Maradona, there's much more of a case against Messi as like Argentina's
yes.
GOAT. I think he probably was Argentina's GOAT until the World Cup.
Yeah, and I think if you ask a lot of Argentinians,
a lot of them would still say
Maradona just for what he's brought for the national team.
With Argentina, like it's two gods in Argentina. There's Messi and there's Maradona.
Yeah,
you know, and if you say Maradona over Messi. Nobody's really criticizing you, really. They may think you're a little old. Nothing wrong with that. I think with Maradona in particular, you had the highs of the World Cups, and I believe a Copa America as well. But then you also had the lows of like going to the World Cup high.
Yeah, there was
a couple of scandals.
Issue, yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
little awkward there. So I think Ronaldo and Messi is very fair. Mm-hmm. Let's go to your country now.
Let's do it. Who do you think it is?
I think there's only one name. Well, okay. There's a couple of names, but I think one stands amongst the rest.
And it is?
Zinedine
Zidane.
Yours as well?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. You kind of alluded to it earlier in the episode.
Did I?
You did.
Oh, all right. Don't talk down my goat.
You said my goat.
Yeah, true. No, I mean, this guy, he's the most loved person, loved footballer by any French person ever.
Yeah.
He's for what he's done to this French national team, I don't think people understand what he's done to this French national team. I mean, the French quote-unquote revolution in terms of football has his face on it, has his fingerprints on it. The 1998 World Cup win with the two goals in the final against Brazil. And then he wins a Euros on the back of that, right? Has great... He wins a Ballon d'Or in 1998, let's not forget. Or is it 1998? I think it is.
Yeah.
So he wins a Ballon d'Or, then he goes to Madrid, scores probably the most iconic goal in a Champions League final ever.
Yep.
And then the 2006 World Cup, comes out of retirement, absolutely carries France until the final.
Yep.
He has that moment. Even with that moment, even with that headbutt, the Materazzi headbutt, the day after the final, the French national team go to the Champs-Élysées to thank everyone. And as soon as Zidane comes out, he's applauded by everybody there.
Really?
He's applauded by everybody there. Mm. He wins World Cup Player of the Tournament, even with that, right? I mean, what a player. Just elegance personified on the football pitch.
I know.
What a player.
And then immediately afterwards in 2010, you guys just...
Yeah, and without him, comes down. And then when Griezmann comes, comes back up. I was thinking of like my top five. Mm. And it's not evident. It's not crazy. Like Zidane is first. Then I'd go Platini because he's also such an influential figure.
Yep.
Then I think I'm Thierry Henry 3.
Yeah.
I think Mbappe sneaks in the 4.
Yeah.
But my bias says Griezmann.
It's 4 and 5.
I think Griezmann for me, like people don't understand. Like we owe Griezmann so much.
Was he player of the tournament in 2018?
He was not. It was Luka Modric. I think he was second, but he was player of the tournament in 2016 for the Euros. Like people forget how good he was in that Euros campaign. If he wins either one of the Euros in 2016 or the Champions League with Atletico Madrid, he wins the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah.
He has he's on that level during that season. Yep. We owe Griezmann so much as a country. And for what he did in the World Cup in 2022 as well, I'm a big believer that he was the best player in that French national team in 2022. And I know it's controversial, but if you look at the games and what he brings to this, what he brought to this team in 2022, mm-hmm. I don't think it's Mbappe. I think it's Griezmann.
Wow. Yeah.
So Griezmann 4, Mbappe 5. Let's move.
Okay. Next up on the list is England. I'm going to go to you first.
I went down the archives here.
Oh, did you?
I went down the archives. I went Sir Bobby Charlton. You went Rooney, I imagine?
That's fair. Yeah, I went Wayne Rooney.
Okay.
I respect those names. I respect the Bobby Moores. I respect the Bobby Charltons, obviously.
It was between, for me, it was Rooney, Bobby Moore, Bobby Charlton.
I think the level of quality needs to be considered.
But I also look at it.
Plus, Rooney is England's top ever goal scorer. Can't ignore that.
Yeah. I also look at it as like what they mean for the country, what they've done for the national team. Bobby Charlton won England their first ever World Cup. So I think scored in the semifinals too. I went down the archives, I'm telling you. Scored in the semifinals to send them into the World Cup final. Like, he was that guy, dude.
Yeah.
And like, that's not even mentioning the entire Manchester United legacy that he has. The Busby Babes.
Oh, okay, okay. Come on. What you know about the Busby Babes?
What you know about the Busby Babes?
Quite a lot.
Yeah?
Go on. Yeah, I think if the gap was bigger, then I would have to go with those old guys. But like, I think the gap isn't that big. So I put Rooney just above them because of the modern football quality.
I understand.
You know? But if you go for a Bobby Charlton, a Bobby Moore, I can't disrespect that at all.
Yeah.
Is there a chance that Harry Kane grabs this spot in like 2 years where it's like,
I think he needs to solidify this with an international trophy.
Yes. They need to win an international trophy and he needs to beat Rooney's record.
Okay. I was going to say he needs to be a key piece in winning that trophy.
Sure.
Yeah.
But he could beat Rooney's record. I think he will. Okay. Next up is Germany. I went for the Kaiser.
Dude, what a nickname, by the way.
I know.
Oh my God. Der Kaiser? The Emperor. Like, yep. It doesn't get much more aura than that.
It doesn't.
I went for Beckenbauer as well.
Won a World Cup, won a Euros, won another World Cup.
Yeah,
as a cherry on top of the manager.
The modern day center back in the 70s.
Yeah.
Like, are we serious? This is a guy that you put him into the game today, and he might just be the best center back in the world.
Wow. Wow. Hey, maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. Franz Beckenbauer.
What you know about the Franz Beckenbauer comps?
There's no way.
No, I've seen a couple highlights.
All right. Franz Beckenbauer. I don't think... I mean, like, who else would you go for? You could say, like, a Philipp Lahm, a Miroslav Klose. You could say a Manuel Neuer, maybe.
Gerd Müller. Gerd Müller's up there. Yeah. Manuel Neuer, I think. I didn't put any goalkeepers in here. There's two that, like, are teetering. It's Manuel Neuer and Gianluigi Buffon for Italy. I think if you had to pick one, I don't mind putting Neuer as the number one German player of all time. Like, it's not a cardinal sin in my opinion.
Not at all.
Like, for what he's done in that goalkeeping position, like, let's not forget, like, he revolutionized the role.
Yeah.
People were inspiring himself off of him.
Sweeper keeper. The original sweeper keeper.
Yeah.
Yep.
The founder.
The founder of the club. next up, speaking of Buffon. Italy.
I
don't have Buffon.
You don't?
I don't know. No. But you could put him.
I went Paolo Maldini.
I also went Paolo Maldini. I think he defines the generation of Italian dominance in defense.
Yeah.
You could say Buffon as well because of the longevity.
Yeah. There's.
I don't even mind that.
I want to go deeper. You know, there's Paolo Rossi. He won the 82 World Cup with Italy.
Yep. Baresta.
Baresta.
Yep.
That's a duo.
It was a duo. What?
Baresi and Nesta?
Yes.
Baresta.
Yep.
It works.
Yeah.
But I think for the longevity, everything considered, like Maldini was just that. He was just a dog. He was a dog. And it was clean too. He started at left back and then as he got older, repositioned into the center back position and he was still so good in that position. He was so good. He was so good. And a symbol of that Italian dominance, as you said. Didn't win any international trophies, though.
He didn't?
No, he didn't. He was runner-up in 2000. And I think also runner-up in 2002.
Could you make an argument for Cannavaro?
I don't think so.
Won a Ballon d'Or?
Yeah.
Baggio?
I think Del Piero has much more of a case than Cannavaro does.
Yeah.
Baggio has a case. Baggio, I didn't even think of Baggio making my list.
But he also has that stain of the World Cup moment.
Yeah. But Baggio has a case. Baggio is a baller.
Yeah.
I think Maldini still tops it. Maybe Baggio might be second, dude.
I didn't know Maldini wasn't there for
2006?
I thought he was like an old guy by then, but I thought he was
there. He had retired. Either retired or injured.
Damn, dude. He
didn't play in that World Cup, though.
That makes me reconsider my position, honestly.
Really?
That makes me consider Buffon, then.
Wow.
Let's move to Brazil.
Brazil.
I'm curious which direction you went. Actually, I kind of know. If you went Bobby Charlton, you're probably going to go for...
And Pelé.
Yeah, I also went for Pelé.
Yeah. I mean, who else?
Like I...
Who are the other guys?
Some say Neymar.
Some say Neymar. I think it's...
Not really.
I see like Romario shouts out there.
R9.
R9. Garincha.
Roberto Carlos.
No, I think it's Pelé.
I think it's Pelé as well. Pelé.
And like you can talk about the 1950s playing against part-time plumbers, all this, like, sure.
I think the gap is so big that you can't even have that conversation.
But we've never seen a player win 3 World Cups since.
Yeah. Before, and you know
and
what,
he did that as a teenager
talk,
too.
That plumber talk was never there before Ronaldo and Messi.
Yeah.
Before his GOAT status began to be questioned.
Like, you ask anyone, actually, I don't think you can anymore, but you ask people that watched
Pelé.
No,
it was like the 70s, bro. It wasn't the 50s. Yeah.
Okay.
It was like the 70s.
Like, I'm sure they're full of praise.
Like, he played, I think one of his World Cup wins was in color.
Okay.
Nice. That's the standard.
Shout out RGB, bro.
Yeah. I'm more of a CYMK.
Kind okay,
of guy.
Wow. All
right. Wow. Go on.
We're getting nerdy in here. Are we going next?
Yeah, it's Pelé. He's called the king for a reason. He's still, his fucking Puma deal is still going to this day. You know?
Really?
Yes, Puma Kings. You can still buy them, and they still have the Pelé logo on them.
Oh.
Still good.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Not Argentina. Spain.
Spain. This one's interesting.
Yeah. Who do you have?
Iniesta.
I have Iniesta, too.
Ah, fuck, dude. Fuck, man. I want to have something different than you.
I want to have an argument.
No, it's Iniesta, and I think it's... I don't want to say it's by far Iniesta, but there's a substantial gap.
I think you look at Spain before that generation of football, and then you look at Iniesta kind of embodying Spain's golden generation, and you kind of look at the building blocks that set leading up to this current generation right now.
He's the centerpiece, the main controller of the best ever national team dynasty that we've ever seen.
And he has Spain's best World Cup moment. Just international moment of all time, scoring the winner against the Netherlands. As well.
Wins the World Cup for Spain. I think he's man of the match in the final against Italy as well.
Yeah.
I think he's also player of the tournament of that tournament. Player of the tournament in the World Cup. One of the two.
Yeah.
I mean, his legacy is insane. One of my favorite players of all time, too.
Who else would you say for them?
Xavi is up there.
Xavi, you would say?
Casillas, maybe?
Oh, Iker Casillas, maybe. Kind of staying in 2014, okay.
Yeah.
And who else would be there, dude? I don't even know. Maybe Yamal one day.
Perhaps. If he keeps
if
his
they
going,
win the World Cup, bro, he might be their best ever player by 20.
If he keeps his going, man, fuck. Dude, like it's like it's 4 or 5 Ballon d'Ors within the next decade for that guy.
You said the same thing for Mbappe, to be fair.
Yeah. I think Yamal just needs to clean up his finishing and he'll be one of the best players.
You see the solo goal he almost scored?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like imagine he had even better finishing on top of that.
Let's go to the Netherlands now. This is an interesting one.
Is it?
I think it's between two names.
Okay.
I went for Johan Cruyff.
So did
but I. But I think you'd also say Ruud Gullit.
Okay.
Because he captained the team that actually ended up winning something.
Okay. I put Johan Cruyff as well.
Yeah. I looked at the, like, Johan Cruyff, like, didn't even play 50 games for the Netherlands.
Yeah. But I actually.
But I think that was sign of the times.
I actually have a crazy fact written down here. Go on. Is that before Johan Cruyff came into the Dutch national team, before he burst onto the scene, the Dutch national team hadn't qualified for a major tournament since 1938.
Jeez.
They finished runners-up in the World Cup that he joined the Dutch national team in.
Jesus.
Insane. I think it was in 78.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair play, dude. Yeah, didn't win anything. I think just a pioneer for modern football.
Pioneer for modern football as a coach as well.
Yeah.
Like,
could you drop Johan Cruyff in football right now?
I don't know. It's a very odd profile of player. Like a tall guy that sure has great skill moves, but is he...
For his day, it was great skill moves,
exactly. You know? But in today's game, would he be as agile as some of these players need to be?
Yeah. The Cruyff turn was like a generational skill back then.
The Cruyff turn, like, I think I might be able to perform a Cruyff turn at the speed he was doing it with my car, dude. A U-turn takes the entire time a Cruyff turn used to take. No, I'm kidding. But yeah, I think he'd be probably worse.
Yeah. Well, he'd definitely be worse. But could he hack it at like a Bayer Leverkusen?
Okay, I mean maybe.
You drop him into Brentford. Does Brentford get relegated?
Save them from relegation.
If Bobby Charlton. Okay. All right. Shout out Johan Cruyff. Next up is Uruguay.
I have Luis Suarez.
Oh, thank you for going Luis Suarez. I thought you were going to go way back.
Yeah, to 1930. I saw that guy name. That guy's name. What was it?
I don't know, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, I went Luis Suarez.
Okay, good. I went Luis Suarez as well. Their top ever goal scorer.
There's a lot of moments like that kind of hinder his legacy.
Like the Ghana handball hinder his legacy?
The Ghana handball, the biting.
Does it hinder his legacy?
Actually, it might make it better.
They went through.
It might make it better.
They went through.
Ah, true. He did put himself
it's
on
more
the
bite. It's more the it's bite. More the bite on Chiellini.
For sure. But a generational striker. What just a player. Killer. What a player.
A modern success, like, popped up in big moments for them, was clutch, carried them to the Copa America in 2011, I remember, barely. And then just beyond that, just, like, unreal striker. Yeah. Yeah. Man, I miss Luis Suarez.
Does Diego Forlan get a sneaky shout?
Diego Forlan gets a shout, too.
Yeah.
You're having that, like, yeah, like modern.
It's definitely modern players. A passing of the torch when Suarez went to the
Uruguayan. What about Rakoba?
Dude, Rakoba. Don't get me started on Rakoba.
He was Uruguayan, right?
Yeah, he was Uruguayan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dude. Where did he play?
He was an attacking midfielder.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to think of other, like, high profile Uruguayans.
But nowhere near. Like,
nowhere near.
He was just like a very good talent.
Mm.
Yeah.
Facundo Palestri. What's up there?
Dude.
All right, we move.
De Arrasqueta.
We move to Belgium. I think another kind of easy answer here.
Really? I was debating too.
Really?
I was debating De Bruyne and Hazard. And I might have spent a little too long on this.
I say more De Bruyne.
I think at the end it's De Bruyne.
Yeah. De Bruyne has.
But let's not forget what Hazard's done.
In 2018.
Man, like he might be the best player in that tournament.
Yeah, it's arguable.
Actually, you asked me who was if Griezmann was. I think I told you he was second. I think Hazard was second. Now that
okay.
I remember. I think Griezmann might have been third.
Does Courtois get in that conversation as well?
He could. Probably the dude Courtois, man. Like, I don't see enough people talking about him as one of the all-time great goalkeepers.
Mm.
And I think he's in that conversation.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, what more does he need to prove?
You're probably right. But I just don't think people give him the plaudits that he deserves until he'll be gone.
Exactly. That's the thing. I think people will actually start to realize how damn good he was once
he retires. Once he leaves Real Madrid and we have that picture of like all the trophies he's won.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn, this guy. Insane. Like 2022, his performance. Oh my God, yeah. Like, 2022, his performance against Liverpool.
Yes.
He won Premier Leagues. He's won La Ligas. Dude. Champions Leagues.
What more do you want?
The injury record is like a little.
Yeah, but.
A little miss sometimes, but.
No, outstanding goalkeeper.
Outstanding goalkeeper. One of the best of our time. You have Neuer. You have Courtois. You have De Gea.
Buffon.
Buffon a little bit before that, but like kind of like at the same time.
Let's include him.
And then who else? Is there anyone else in that conversation, really, of like elite goalkeepers of the age? Petr Cech, perhaps. Allison.
Yeah.
A little later. Ederson a little later. Not this guy.
Not that guy.
Emi Martinez?
Come on. Maybe for national team, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't dare put Emi Martinez.
But De Bruyne? De Bruyne, best Belgian player of all time?
I have De Bruyne, best Belgian player of all time. I think you look at the amount of moments he had.
I was just about to say.
From like 2014.
It's the moments.
To 2024. And it's like the amount of times this guy popped up and longevity that he had was.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. The moments. The biggest one for me is that goal against Brazil in the 2018 World Cup to send them to the semifinals.
Yeah.
Like that's.
Yeah. Oh, is Vincent Kompany in this conversation?
Maybe. I forgot Vincent. I don't know if he's had as much of an impact for Belgium as like a Jan Vertonghen. Like I don't think he was that impactful for Belgium because.
Bro, Kompany, Jan Vertonghen, Toby
Alderweireld. Bro, that's a fucking.
Damn.
That's a center back trio there.
And then you had fullbacks of like. Meunier, Thorgan Hazard played there for a little bit. Yeah. Oh my God, who was their left back?
Who was their left back?
Oh, this is gonna bother me.
I'll search it up. Don't worry.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of names for Belgium now. Belgium looks very, very different. I think you could almost make the argument that De Bruyne is still their best player all these years later. They're kind of like dropping off a little bit. They had Lukaku there in their golden age. I mean, they've had their golden age and then that's about it. Now they're kind of like receding again. But I think Kevin De Bruyne was the embodiment of that golden age, kind of alongside Hazard, along Kompany, along Courtois, along Lukaku as well, along Vertonghen as well. And I'm saying all these names and wondering how the hell did these guys win something?
I know. It's crazy. It's insane. But they also, they have a sneaky good team coming up again.
Openda.
Like they have a lot of youngsters. Like Malik Fofana I was talking about for Lyon.
Yeah.
Like they have a lot of young players that can develop into something good.
I have to look it up now because I'm curious.
It's a Vermeulen.
Vermeulen, they were
playing. They're playing a back four. Alderweireld, Vermeulen, Kompany, Vertonghen.
Oh, De Bast they have coming through the ranks as well.
De Bast. Maxim De Kuyper as well.
Yeah, Maxim De Kuyper.
I'm telling you.
Okay.
Little Matt Sells in there as well. How old is that guy now?
Okay. Next up, we have Croatia, which is very straightforward.
Very straightforward. It's Luka.
Yeah, it's Luka Modric.
Luka Modric.
One of the best
midfielders of all time.
Shout out to Davy Suker, but there's no conversation here.
Shout out Suker.
Is it Davy Suker? Or is
Davor.
It
Davor.
Davor Suker?
I think it's Davor.
I apologize.
Yeah, he'll be real mad at that.
Sorry, man. But yeah, it's Luka Modric. It's undoubtedly Luka Modric.
Yep.
I don't think there's any conversation really to have there. Again, you want to talk about golden ages? Look at Croatia. Every single tournament, you're like, oh, I think this is the year they kind of recede. And then.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
They don't.
Okay. One of those tournaments was 2022 when they shared a group with Canada. PTSD from that tournament. But let's go to Canada now. I think there is also one name.
You think so?
Yeah. Well, there's honorable mentions.
I put this guy in, and I was debating whether he's already there.
Okay.
I put Alphonso Davies.
I also put Alphonso
Davies. Okay, good. I'm glad we're on the same page.
That's what I meant by one guy.
Okay.
I thought you were about to pull out a Dwayne De Rosario there. I was like, there's no way. Shout out Dwayne De Rosario, an icon of mine growing up. But, I mean, like, look at this recent success and look at the man that's, like, at the center of it all. It's Alphonso Davies. He is by far, like, not only the most talented Canadian that has ever, like, come from this country, but also... just the moments that he's had bringing us to the World Cup, yeah, just beyond anything.
He's at the face of a revolution in terms of football in Canada, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, his move to Bayern and his immediate success for Bayern in that 2020 UCL campaign did so many good things for the country.
Yeah.
So many good things for the country. It brought so many people together. And then he scores the first goal for Canada in the world, in their history of the World Cup. Like, he's at the face of every pioneering moment in Canada's footballing history.
Mm, that's right.
So,
shout out to Atiba Hutchinson as well.
Yeah.
So, like, those old guys, like, obviously deserve their respect. But, like, at their peak, you know, we were losing 8-1 to Honduras. You know, like, that, those are not good times in Canadian football.
Exactly.
As talented as they were in the MLS and in their age, like, this new generation of players is just beyond anything we would have expected 10, 15 years ago. And they deserve the credence for that. So, shout out Alfonso Davies. I think in a couple of years, it'll literally just be the current Canada, like, best players.
Yeah.
Like, making up 8 of the top 10.
Yeah.
Like, speaking of old guys, I don't mean to offend by keep saying that, but United States.
You went for an old guy, huh?
I went Landon Donovan.
I did too. Can we, like, have something different in here?
Fuck, man.
Okay, I'll go Clint Dempsey then.
Clint Dempsey is definitely the most talented,
yeah,
American player, at least of that age. But I think you ask any U.S. men's national team fan of that time, and they will tell you for the U.S., it was always Landon doing.
Yeah,
the best for that
is
that
true.
Team.
That is true. There's also moments with Landon Donovan where he's done a lot of great things for the U.S. men's national team. I think in 2010 he scores a goal against Algeria that sends them into the knockout stages. I think in the last minute, something like that. So it's a lot of moments that bring people together that transform the way that we see the U.S. as a footballing country almost.
Is Christian Pulisic ever going to see
this? I was debating
title?
Him.
Already?
I was debating him, yeah.
What does he need to do?
I think in terms of talent, it doesn't get much better. I think he could probably be, I think he might be the most talented one so far.
Yep.
He has a Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he needs a couple of good seasons. Like, he just needs to do well with the national team.
Yes.
He needs
they
to
need
bring
a good
them
run here. They
he needs
need
to bring them to that extra
bro.
Step.
Yeah,
to that extra
need a
level.
Run.
Exactly.
Man. I remember, was it Copa America where that the U.S. was in? This was 2024 or 2023.
Okay.
No, 2024.
The last one.
2024.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, like, hate watching them,
yeah,
because of my bias.
Of course.
But, like, I will actually, for the, like, prosperity of soccer in this continent, I will genuinely be cheering for them.
Yeah?
At the World Cup.
Okay.
Which sounds weird to say.
Hey, why not?
Kevin Sullivan, maybe in 10 years, we're having that talk. He'll maybe.
Be
26,
He'll
be 25
yeah,
by then.
Insane.
Yeah. And Mexico, last but not least.
Hugo Sanchez.
Dude. Who else is there, bro?
Rafa Marquez. Yeah. Is that his name?
I think that's his
name.
The
center back from,
yep,
from Barcelona.
No. I wrote easily their most talented ever player, led them to their joint best World Cup run in 86. First ever Mexican superstar to rival Europe's elite. He was great for Real Madrid back in the 80s.
Yeah.
I hear. You know, for those
I think
of
he won five
remember,
five of the Ligas in a row, something like that. He
yep.
won a Champions League.
Yep.
Yeah. Chicharito maybe could be in there.
Yeah.
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 In terms of talent, also
like modern Mexican football, it's him, it's Giovanni Dos Santos.
Yeah, Carlos Vela.
Ooh,
like that's a that,
yeah,
that,
I forgot
he's
about Carlos
talented.
Vela.
Like in terms of talent,
yeah,
he's
yeah,
up
yeah.
there. He's a talented footballer.
Ooh, yeah, definitely having those talks. Oh, Herrera as well. You're talking about.
Oh yeah,
the midfielder. Yeah, he's had like a crazy amount of appearances for them.
Mm-hmm. I think they have a. They have a guy, an up-and-coming guy. He's like 17 years old. He's like a midfielder.
We need a good Mexican youngster, bro.
Yes.
We've been missing those.
I think, let me pull up his name for you.
Okay. Like, I think the world, like the football world is at its best when Mexico is doing well. You know?
Gilberto Mora, 16 years old.
Remember
and
the
I've,
name.
I've heard big praises from him.
Remember the name.
For him.
Remember the name, man. Okay. Love it.
And Does that
will,
do it?
Well, that'll do it.
There you go. That'll long it, pod.
Man. All right. Yeah, very long pod. But I enjoyed it nonetheless.
It was great.
That being said, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back to our normal coverage next week, hopefully with a four-man. Maybe we'll record on like a little Sunday night if we have to, but with school back, obviously, it's a little tougher. But we're persevering.
Of course.
Just like Antoine was today through the cold. Okay. I really appreciate that, dude.
Of course, dude.
You feeling okay?
I'm good.
Do you have any classes today?
No, thank God.
Yeah. All right, go home and chill a little bit.
I'll edit.
Love it, man. All right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of the Six Air Box Podcast. If you are listening on YouTube, be sure to like, subscribe, hit that little notification bell so you don't miss any future rankings that we do. If you are listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, give us a little 5-star rating and let us know who is the GOAT of your country. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we will see you all back here next week.
We out!
Goodbye.